And welcome back to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Let's get into some environmental commentary here. Titled Indifferent to a Planet in Pain, written by Bill McKibben. As the hot sun sets on this long, odd summer, you might try staring into the nighttime sky. Several times in the last few months, observers in the lower 48 have seen noctilucent clouds, which develop about 50 miles above the Earth's surface, clouds so high that they reflect a sun's rays long after nightfall. They're spectacular, and they're also out of place. These odd clouds belong in a far northern and southern latitudes, but global warming seems to be driving them towards the equator. The same carbon dioxide that warms the lower atmosphere cools the upper layer, the mesosphere, causing the clouds to form. Sightings as far south as Colorado are a big event, according to Gary Thomas, a professor at the University of Colorado's Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics. Quote, while they are beautiful phenomenon, Professor Thomas told National Geographic's online magazine, quote, these clouds may be a message from Mother Nature that we are upsetting the equilibrium of the atmosphere. 10 years ago, global warming was a big, strong hypothesis, but now, after a decade of intensive research, scientists around the world have formed an ironclad consensus that we are heating the planet. Almost daily, some new piece of evidence appears. The weekly editions of the journals Science and Nature make the Blair Witch Project look like the Babysitter's Club. Forget it, the piddling drought and heat wave that withered lawns and fields across the Northeast this summer. Consider the real news. Spring comes a week earlier across the Northern Hemisphere than it did just 30 years ago. Severe rainstorms have grown by almost 20%, precisely what you'd expect on a planet where warmer air can carry more water vapor. A Navy sonar survey conducted this summer shows the Arctic ice sheet is in many places 40 inches thinner than its normal 10 feet. Warmer waters have bleached coral reefs around the globe, glaciers are melting, and sea levels are rising. The question is not, what should we do? Though it's far too late to prevent global warming, it takes no special insight to deduce the policies that would slow it down. Stiff increases in the price of fossil fuels would quickly bring a new generation of renewable energy technologies to the fore. Raising fuel economy standards for cars and trucks would end the trend toward ever bigger sport utility vehicles, and focused diplomacy and foreign aid would keep developing countries from sliding into our bad habits. No, the question is why we've done so little. In 1992, President George Bush promised the world that the United States would emit no more carbon dioxide in 2000 than it had in 1990. The Clinton administration instead watched with little apparent concern as our emissions surged more than 10%. Congress refuses to even consider the baby step presented by the 1997 Kyoto Accords, which were to return us to 1990 levels by the year 2010. The issue barely even crops up in presidential campaigns. The reason, I think, is that we don't yet feel viscerally the wrongness of what we're doing. Not just the very rational fears about what it would look like to live in a superheated world, but even more, the simple shock that we've grown so large we can dominate everything. Earthquakes and volcanoes are the only natural disasters left. Everything that happens above the surface comes in at least part from us, from our appetites and our economies. I used to wonder why my parents' generations had been so blind to the wrongness of segregation. They were people of good conscience, so why had inertia ruled for so long? Now I think I understand better. It took an emotional shock of seeing police dogs rip the flesh of protesters for white people to really understand the day-to-day corrosiveness of the Jim Crow. We need that same gut understanding of our environmental situation if we are to take the giant steps we must take soon. Go outside. Try and understand that the sun beating down, the rain pouring down, the wind blowing are all by now our human artifacts. We don't live on the planet we were born on. We live on a new, poorer, simpler planet, and we continue to impoverish it with every ounce of oil and pound of coal we burn. In retrospect, it will be clear. 100 years from now, people may well remember the 1990s, not as the decade of the Internet spread or the Dow's ascension, but as the years when global temperatures began to spike upward, as the years when rain and wind and ice and seawater began irrefutably to reflect the power and heedlessness of our species. But how bad it will get depends on how deeply and how quickly we can feel. It depends on whether we're still capable of shock. This opinion was written by Bill McKibben and appeared in the New York Times on September 4th. Let's talk a little bit more about genetics here. Despite widespread opposition to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's involvement with Terminator technology, the agency continues to use taxpayer dollars to support genetic seed sterilization. Controversy over the Terminator technology has generated an avalanche of public opposition. U.S. Department of Agriculture is blatantly ignoring the public outcry, but a new patent reveals that USDA funding supports additional Terminator research at Purdue University in Indiana. We're urging folks to phone right Secretary Dan Glickman on the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He's the secretary down there. The address, 200A Witten Building, W-H-I-T-T-E-N, 1400 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20250. Once again, that address is Secretary Dan Glickman, USDA, 200A Witten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20250. Phone number, 202-720-3631. That's 202-720-3631. Tell him to stop using USDA's scarce public research dollars to pursue a dangerous anti-farmer technology that threatens biodiversity. Tell him the USDA must abandon all research on genetic seed sterilization, develop a policy prohibiting the use of public research dollars on Terminator technologies, and use public research dollars to support plant breeding for sustainable technology. And in news about the presidential campaign, in a blow to his cherished reputation as champion of the environment, Vice President Gore has lost the endorsement of the Friends of the Earth political arm to his rival for the Democratic presidential nomination, former Senator Bill Bradley of New Jersey. The Friends of the Earth Political Action Committee will announce its endorsement of Bradley at a news conference today, signaling what it calls, quote, both disillusionment with Gore's environmental performance over the past 7 years and recognition of Bradley's superior environmental credentials, unquote. Kiki Moore, president, press secretary to the Gore campaign, did not comment directly on the news, but said Al Gore has long believed in and worked for a balanced approach to making a clean and healthy environment a reality for America's working families. Eric Hauser, Bradley's spokesman, said, quote, we're very happy to get this support because it reflects Bill Bradley's ability to get big things accomplished. Friends of the Earth is a 30-year-old organization with a membership of 20,000, one of the smaller groups in that sector regarded as being somewhat left of center on the spectrum of environmental organizations. It has concentrated more on international issues than the larger environmental groups. Its statement says that during their years on Capitol Hill, Bradley had a higher rating than Gore from the League of Conservation Voters, 85% compared with Gore's 66%, but it faults Gore even more for, quote, being part of an administration that has done significant international environmental damage, unquote. The group says Gore and the administration have, quote, done poorly on his signature issue, protecting the ozone layer, by accepting legislation last year that weakened the phase-out date for the dangerous chemical methyl bromide. That law delayed the date from 2001 till 2005. The organization also says that in negotiations the past 2 years on the updating of the Montreal Agreement of 1987, the administration, quote, opposed the stronger ozone protection measures sought by European nations. Ironically, Gore has been criticized by many Republicans and business groups for his role in negotiating the Kyoto Agreement on global warming, and the administration has delayed in submitting it for a Senate vote because of that opposition. And moving on to Congress, the American Lands Alliance criticized lawmakers today for rejecting a proposal that would have reduced taxpayer-subsidized logging in national forests. The proposal offered by Senators Richard Bryan, Peter Fitzgerald, and Ron Wyden as an amendment to the Senate Interior Appropriations Bill would have shifted funds from the U.S. Forest Service's annual commercial timber sale program to forest restoration projects such as road maintenance, fish and wildlife conservation, and watershed rehabilitation. The amendment failed by a 54-43 vote. Quote, the American people were robbed today. By rejecting the Bryan Amendment, the Senate squandered a golden opportunity to save taxpayer dollars and our national forests, fish, and wildlife. Logging has been a major source of degradation in national forests. In California, logging and associated road building has eliminated and fragmented wildlife habitats, silted streams and rivers, and pushed species like the California spotted owl, the Pacific fisher, and the northern spotted owl closer to extinction. Logging has also cost taxpayers. For most of this decade, the federal timber program has lost hundreds of millions of dollars every year. The GAO, the Government Accounting Office, reported the Forest Service timber program lost nearly $1 billion from 1992 to 1994 alone. Quote, some members of Congress still think our public forests should be sold for private gain, said California organizer Brian Vincent. Our forests are worth a lot more than corporate pork and plywood. And moving on to state news, send an email today to Save Southern Forests. Four federal agencies have joined to conduct an unprecedented comprehensive study of southern forest sustainability. These agencies have asked the public for comment on on the direction of the study. Type in your comments by September 15th or whenever you can get them at the webpage www.srs.fs.fed.us/sustain. That's www.srs.fs.fed.us/sustain. Forests provide clean drinking water, protect habitat for hunting and fishing, and improve the quality of life for families throughout the South. Corporations must not build any new chip mills until we have more information about their impact on forests and have adequate safeguards in place for the forests. Contact the Dogwood Alliance for more information. Their number 828-883-5889. All right, this is the number that's all eights practically. Here it is again, the Dogwood Alliance, 828-883-5889. Or you can visit their webpage at www.dogwoodalliance.org. And from Texas, we read the Texas Committee on Natural Resources, the Sierra Club, and the Wilderness Society won a victory in Texas recently when the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a 1997 injunction against most logging on national forests in the state. The ruling charged that the Forest Service violated sections of the National Forest Management Act by failing to protect soil and water and failed to conduct required monitoring of timber sales, said a press release. The next step for the plaintiffs will come in September when a motion will be filed to stop logging on Log Leaf Ridge. All right. If you'd like further information, contact Janice at 512-327-4119. That's Janice of the Texas Committee on Natural Resources, 512-327-4119. And the WTO is coming up. Anarchists who masterminded this summer's riot in the City of London are planning a second protest to target banks and financial institutions. The Sunday Times investigation has revealed militant groups including Reclaim the Streets and Earth First, which coordinated the June 18th action, also known as J18, have been in contact with their American counterparts to launch a simultaneous campaign on November 30th. And this is, of course, from the Sunday Times of London. A website has been set up to coordinate activists' calls for a day of, quote, civil disobedience and simultaneous actions in financial districts in major cities around the world. Last week, a member of the California-based Ruckus Society, the group behind the website, confirmed that it was in talks with British activists. The date has been chosen to coincide with the meeting of the World Trade Organization in Seattle, Washington, and will be attended by representatives from 150 countries. And the Deputy Chief Inspector, Kieran Sharp, of the City of London Police said, quote, we are aware of this date and are taking the matter seriously. The J18 Day of Action, billed as an international carnival against capitalism, turned into a violent protest demonstration that left 46 people injured and damaged property worth £2 million. After the protest, a secret meeting was held by Reclaim the Streets, at which activists called for another attack. Quote, while the iron was hot, the worst violence occurred at the Leaf Features Exchange Building, and nearby Rabobank, where windows were smashed and offices wrecked. A McDonald's outlet and a Mercedes-Benz dealership were also vandalized. John Dost of Rabobank, said it was unfortunate that we were targeted last time. I only hope that this time we will be spared. A special action camp called Smash the WTO, intended to train activists in direct action campaign and street protests ahead of the event in November, is being held this week near Seattle. Among the speakers is John Jordan, a leading figure of Reclaim the Streets UK. In an email sent to the Sunday Times last week, the activist warned, people are really getting prepared for some good action. I guarantee there will be some anarchist shit going down, too. Dave, an eco-warrior with Earth First, said direct action is the only way forward and plans are being made for another protest. We are waiting for further details by email. And by the way, you can get further information at Ruckus at ruckus.org. Okay. All right, from Southern California, today in Los Angeles Superior Court, actually a few days ago, Division 86, the Honorable Judge David Yaff ruled that the challenge to the environmental impact report and subdivision for the proposed 119-home development by the Catalyst Development Corporation on approximately 23 acres of the ecologically unique bluff top of the Bellona Wetlands will be stayed since the California Coastal Commission rejected it by an 11-0 vote the request for a coastal development permit. The commission ruled at its August 13th hearing that the project will cause significant harm to coastal zone resources that include a prehistoric Shoshone-Gaborone village site, rare coastal sage scrub, and important wildlife habitats. Craig Sherman of San Diego, attorney for the plaintiff Spirit of the Sage Council, submitted testimony from the Coastal Commission decision which nullified the coastal development permit issued by the City of Los Angeles on February 24, 1999. Sherman stated, "We always knew how faulty and inaccurate the environmental impact report was. The Coastal Commission has affirmed this and the court has recognized it as well. My client, the Sage Council, is committed to ensuring that the laws are followed throughout this continuing process." Kathy Knight, wetlands coordinator of the Sage Council, was optimistic, quote, "We will continue to work on finding a way to preserve this precious cultural and biological resource for all future generations to enjoy. We have asked Catalyst Development Corporation to sell or donate this land. Thus far, they have declined to do so, but we are hopeful that after our victory today, they will change their minds." And if you like further information about what's happening, you can contact Kathy Knight, the wetlands coordinator, at 310-450-5961. That's 310-450-5961. And the Spirit of the Sage Council at 619-702-7892. That's Spirit of the Sage Council, 619-702-7892. In other environmental news, from Baca Ranch, New Mexico. After 2 years of negotiations, the White House announced Wednesday that it has reached preliminary agreement to buy a 95,000-acre ranch in northern New Mexico that supports one of the nation's largest elk herds. The $1.1 million deal would permanently protect its natural preserve lands surrounded by the Santa Fe National Forest. The Baca Ranch is located in the Jemez Mountains region west of Santa Fe and is home to 17 threatened or endangered species, including the Mexican spotted owl, the Jemez Mountains salamander, and the Rio Grande cutthroat trout. About 6,000 cattle and 7,500 elk roam the ranch. The ranch also contains the huge Valles Caldera, the collapsed crater of an ancient volcano, as well as six other large volcanic valleys. The ranch is owned by the heirs of oil baron James Dunnigan, who died in 1980. The Dunnigan family gave the federal government until the end of 1999 to purchase the ranch so that its unique natural assets could be permanently preserved. Protecting the ranch for future generations has been a top conservation priority for the administration of President Bill Clinton. So good news from New Mexico. And moving to Oregon, tribal members, local citizens, and environmental groups appeal the Coquille Forest timber sale. When Judge Dwyer ruled on August 2nd that timber sales were not following the Northwest Forest Plan, federal agencies canceled sale auctions until the problems could be fixed. Forests managed by the Bureau of Indian Affairs are also required to follow the Northwest Forest Plan. However, the BIA did not cancel the Chu-A-Cloche timber sale on the Coquille Forest until after citizens appealed it. The BIA had failed to survey for and protect rare plants and wildlife. As a result of the appeal, the BIA canceled the Chu-A-Cloche auction scheduled for August 31st. The Coquille Forest was acquired by the BIA in September 1998 from the Bureau of Land Management under the terms of the 1996 Coquille Forest Act. The 26 citizens and groups appealing the sale include the Coquille tribal members as well as business owners and citizens of Coquille, Myrtle Point, and Coos Bay, Oregon. In addition to finding that the sale did not survey for wildlife, the appeal also found the BIA was cutting too many trees too fast. Quote, "My understanding was that they agreed to improve the forest for the future, not just clear-cut it for now," said Dewey Gilkey, a senior Coquille tribal member and one of the appellants. "I logged for 30 years, and I know what logging does. They could thin and selective cut and still keep the wildlife in the streams, but they are just interested in money and money alone. I want what's best for future generations of the tribe, but this way they will just clear-cut and then blow every dime. It won't benefit anybody except the ones in power," said Gilkey, an elder of the tribe. The BIA had previously determined that the sustainable harvest for the 3,400 acres available for cutting on the Coquille Forest is 2 million board feet from 30 acres per year. For 10 years, that is 20 million board feet from 300 acres But in the very first logging proposal, the Chua-Klashi sale, the BIA authorized clear-cutting 333 acres, removing 16 to 21 million board feet just over a two-year period. And that is more than the entire forest's sustainable harvest for 10 years. The appellants claim this will result in economic hardship to the local community. Selling off 10 years of trees in only 2 years does not provide steady employment or long-term economic benefits for the community of Coquille or the Coquille tribe. And from Washington, critics are right on the mark when they say U.S. Senate is legislating ignorance by voting to harvest federally owned timberlands without conducting wildlife surveys on them. 52 senators voted to put sacks over their heads and uphold a provision written by Slade Gorton, Republican of Washington, that nullifies a ruling by the U.S. District Court Judge William Dwyer, as well as another one by a federal judge in Oregon that pertains to BLM holdings. Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, voted against the measure. The judges ruled that the agencies are obliged by law to conduct surveys of certain sensitive creatures that might be affected by destruction of their habitat through clear-cutting, so the Republican-led Senate, congenitally allergic to the enlightened concept of multipurpose public forests, is now on record as wishing not to know what damage might be done to forest ecosystems by timber harvesting. And from California, some great news, folks. Senate Bill 621, written by Byron Scher, has just passed the Assembly and headed back to the Senate for concurrence on the Assembly amendments. If they concur, it will go to the governor's desk, and he has already signaled that he intends to sign it. This landmark bill establishes civil penalties exactly like those in AB 717, written by Fred Keeley, who originally would have imposed before the timber industry labor lobby forced Fred to reduce the fines and moderate the language. Please thank Fred Keeley for his part. He worked very hard on the Assembly floor to make this happen. And Florida developers must fix wetlands damage. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has ordered a Florida developer to remove dams and fill material that was bulldozed into a tributary of the Big Thompson River and restore wetlands damaged in a proposed residential development northwest of Loveland, Florida. The EPA says the unpermitted discharges occurred between the spring and fall of 1998. Threatening water quality on Indian Creek, a large dam built by a previous landowner, failed this spring, sending a large amount of sediment downstream. The EPA has ordered Fred Bernstein, developer of the Indian Creek Ranch, to immediately stop any further discharges into Indian Creek, its wetlands or tributaries, and to submit a plan within 30 days for assessing and repairing the damage. Work must be completed by March 31st, the year 2000. The plan must be prepared by a qualified wetland scientist acceptable to the EPA and must map the disturbed areas and describe the damage and sediment deposited downstream. Describe the work to be done to remove sediments and restore the damaged area, and describe how the area's recovery will be monitored over time. Under the Clean Water Act, Bernstein could be fined up to $27,500 per day for discharging pollutants into waterways without a permit from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Carol Ruschen, EPA's enforcement director in Denver, said the agency is, quote, taking action to prevent further harm to Indian Creek and Big Thompson watershed from unpermitted construction of dams and road crossings. Well, that's about all for the news. To get news announcements and comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send letters, donations, CDs, or cassettes to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. To be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. And for more in-depth news and information about Earth First Movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal. They're at P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Earth First Radio is broadcast live on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Thursday at 8 p.m., or you can listen to Earth First Radio anytime on your computer on the World Wide Web at radioforall.web.net. That's radioforall, the number 4, .web.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. If you found us on the web, ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening, and please tune in again. And we're going to head on out of here with a Daryl Cherney tune. This one called It's Camp.
Now Bobby and Susie were dead broke, had nowhere they could go. Someone told them in Northern California they could make some dough. All they need is a plot of land and 9 or 10 little seeds. Where Reagan blew the economy, a Mother Nature would succeed. Now everything was going fine for the first year or two. They spent their money back in town, and boy, how that town grew. They never hurt nobody, but somebody took offense. And that's when the campaign against marijuana planting did commence. It's camp with their helicopters. It's camp with their Keystone Coppers. It's camp come to confiscate the land. It's camp, forget the Constitution. It's camp, reversing evolution. It's camp, hey, we're getting camped on again. Now Jimmy was an unemployed logger. He'd been clear cut out of work. He had a wife and 3 small children. Boy, how that man hurt. But then a hippie told him about growing dope, and he thought he'd give it a try. And if there's only one thing that Jimmy learned, is that hippies never lie. Now all the loggers in the woods started to fall in line. Growing stuff instead of cutting it down suited them just fine. Bankers, housewives, old folks too began to see the light. But some folks just get ornery if things start going right. It's camp with their helicopters. It's camp with their Keystone Coppers. It's camp come to confiscate the land. It's camp, forget the Constitution. It's camp, reversing evolution. It's camp, hey, we're getting camped on again. Well, they'll break down your door and they'll rip up your floor when they come to search your home. They'll tear up your grandma's picture and x-ray your doggy's bone. They'll search your cesspool, spice rack, kitty litter box, your children's teddy bear, your touch green tube and your compost heap and your dirty underwear. Now we've got nuclear bombs and chemical waste, and we're running out of oil. We've got apartheid in South Africa and on Arizona's soil. We've got herpes, AIDS, and cancer, and animal torture labs. We've got alcoholism and unemployment and poison Tylenol tabs. But big business and the government, they like things the way they are, and will keep you all preoccupied paying your Visa card. But plant a seed and watch them all come out of their corporate caves, but they don't want folks being self-sufficient. They might run out of slaves. It's camp with their helicopters. It's camp with their Keystone Coppers. It's camp come to confiscate the lands. It's camp, forget the Constitution. It's camp, reversing evolution. It's camp, hey, we're getting camped on again. One more time. It's camp with their helicopters. It's camp with their Keystone Coppers. It's camp, come to confiscate your lands. It's camp, forget the Constitution. It's camp, reversing evolution. It's camp, hey,